So now we just come to the beginnings. I won't take you right through it till after the break. But just to the beginnings of the next portrait, the third portrait. This baptized Jesus, as we've already intimated by quoting Isaiah chapter 42, we're told, then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tested, or tempted, it's the same Greek word, to be tested by the devil. He fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was famished. So we've seen Jesus, firstly, beautifully intimate with God. It's taking us close into the mystery of the divinity of Jesus the Son, that intimacy he had with God. Here we see, and Matthew doesn't want us to forget this, and we've got to hold them both together, how intimate he is with us. Because, and we're going to see, all the temptations are about what it means to be the Son of God. We've just been told, you are my Son. Well, what does that really mean? And this text tells us it doesn't mean that Jesus was freed from the desert testing that we all have to go through. It didn't make it any easier for him. It didn't exclude him from it. He didn't ride above the desert in a helicopter. He belonged here walking right where we have to walk. The Spirit led him where we are, of course, into the same world that you and I are led into. And it's a desert. The two texts from the letter of the person who we don't know the actual author, not that that matters, but it's called the Letter to the Hebrews in the Pauline corpus of books, anyhow, of letters. This is Hebrews chapter 2, verse 17 to 18, which says it so clearly. Jesus had to become like his brothers and sisters. In every respect. Because he himself was tested by what he suffered. And doesn't suffering test us all? He's able to help those who are being tested. This is really critical. And I don't know whether I keep overstressing it, but I just know where most people have come from, I think, or the people that I've been dealing with for, 30 years, and my own history as well. And many of us came from an understanding of Jesus where his divinity was so important to believe in, and we did believe it, that we took his divinity so, it was the thing we knew, as it were. And then we had to struggle to take his humanity seriously. Oh, well, he couldn't have felt like that because he was God. Or he wouldn't have really done that because he was God. Do you get me? Or he must have known the whole future because he was God. We had this, God was in place, fixed. We knew that, that's right, that's okay. And then his humanity kept being distorted by our faith in the divinity. So a lot of us, fell into the earliest heresy of the church, which is called Docetism. The early church was not troubled by the divinity of Jesus. That was easy. They had pantheons all through the world. Rome had a big pantheon with all the different statues of the gods in. What's another god, for God's sake? So put him in. That wasn't their problem. Their problem was Jesus was God, but he wasn't really man, was he? No, we know that. He just appeared to be a man. And I beg you to honestly go back into your own psyche. And I've got a suspicion you might find hovering somewhere there. Do you think you might have once thought that Jesus was human, perhaps from about the chin down? But what about here? What about the head? Do you think you probably thought he was actually divine up here? That his thoughts were divine? He had divine ideas? Or do you believe that Jesus had to be like us in every respect? He really is man. And that means a lot. It means he's got a heart like yours and a mind like yours and mine. It means he walks in the same desert. He has many of the same doubts. He doesn't know more than you know in the sense of a special siphoned view. Of course, what makes him unique is said in the next passage of Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15. Making the point I'm making, we don't have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, for heaven's sake. Because he had them. But we have one who in every respect has been tested as we are, comma, yet without sin. That's the bit. When I face the test, I fail. Often enough, not always, but often enough, and so do you. We back off love. We back off truth. We look after our own convenience when it gets too tough, or whatever words you put on the things that we humans tend to do. Jesus dared to be human, right through to it. And as you know, there's an old saying, to human, it is... So I know the Latin, can't think of the English. It's human to err, we say. It's not. When you sin, you're not acting as a human being at all. And neither am I. When I sin, I'm being less than human. I'm not daring to live up to my humanity. But I sink lower than it. I think that's what sin is. Jesus remained human with all its compassion and all its struggle and all its loving and all its purity and all its yearning for God, and he didn't sin. But the problem with the way many of us grew up was we kept saying he didn't sin because he was God, and that was the out, and that kills it, because you're not God and I'm not God, so it doesn't help. But if Jesus was human and didn't sin, wow, what does that tell us about us? What does that tell us about the saints who believed that and who came to a point where they did not sin? Wonderful. Oh, that we had a community full of sinless people. Why not? We don't have to sin. And so we're watching Jesus in our desert really being tested. Not pretend testing, real testing. And we'll see it right through the gospel, but never deviating from the truth in love. The 40 days is the only point I'll make now, and then we'll take our break. Why does he say he was tested for fasting for 40 days and 40 nights? Why this 40 days and 40 nights? It's got nothing to do with 39 or 41. Split the difference. 40 is a symbolic term right through the Bible for two things, both of which have to be held in intention here. There's too detail, but it's a symbol of a journey of testing. The flood, for example, in the Genesis 7, one of the ancient story of the flood was it lasted 40 days. Now, the key to 40 is found in the next verse, Numbers chapter 32, verse 13. The Lord made the people of God wander in the wilderness for 40 years. Why? Until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord had disappeared. 40 is a generation. Everyone who left Egypt, none of them got into the Holy Land, not even Moses. And then one series of texts has Joshua linked in, and he's the link between the two. But we can say generally they didn't get there. It was the second generation that entered. A generation is a 40-year journey from slavery to a promised land. And we've all got to walk our journey. We've all got to walk our 40 days and 40 nights in a desert till we come to the promised land, just like Moses and the others did. In other words, Jesus was tested all his life to the end. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 2. Remember the long way that the Lord your God has led you these 40 years in the wilderness. Why? To humble you, testing you to know what is in your heart. Well, God's not actually doing the testing. Life is. People are. But life does test us. And we discover, to our initial embarrassment and final joy, who we really are. We find what's in our heart through the testing of life, don't we? And we find what's in the heart of Jesus through the testing, finally through to the crucifixion. So whatever the tests that might come to us, our heart is being revealed in the way we respond to those tests. But it's not just a time of trial. It is also a symbol of a period of grace. And so some lovely texts here, Deuteronomy 2:7. Surely the Lord your God has blessed you in all your undertakings. He knows you're going through this great wilderness. These 40 years the Lord your God has been with you. You have lacked nothing. What a wonderful truth to say to somebody. You could say to anyone here of us in the room tonight, you or I have lacked nothing. We've been given all the grace we need, all the love we need, not that we want, but that we need to journey. It's always been there with us. How blind we are sometimes to it. But God will pick us up on the next round. You've lacked nothing in this journey because God has been with us. Amos chapter 2 verse 10. I brought you up out of the land of Egypt and I led you 40 years in the wilderness. Why? To possess the land. That's the goal. We're not going nowhere. Exodus 16:35. The Israelites ate manna for 40 years until they came to the land of Canaan. God fed them the manna from heaven as he feeds us on our journey. And as we'll see, he feeds Jesus. Exodus 24:18. Moses entered the cloud and went up on the mountain and was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. A symbol now of the other side of it. It's trial, but it's also communion with God at the most intimate level, all happening in the same desert. The journey of Elijah in 1 Kings 19:8, the same. Elijah got up and ate and drank, and he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. And finally, perhaps the loveliest text of them all, Hosea chapter 2, verse 14, says, to God is saying to the people, I will now allure her and bring her, the people, into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. There's something about the wilderness, the desert, where we're free from distraction, where there's a silence, where we can't escape the inner reality of who we are. That's why the monks went into the desert. That's why we use that as a symbol for retreat and so on. There has to be a place of desert here too, where God can take us away from everything, and that can be hard, but it's only in order to love us, to speak tenderly to us. And so we see Jesus in the desert, 40 days and 40 nights, all the journey of his life to the promised land, which is communion with God. And in that desert, tested like us in every way, really human, but also tenderly loved by God every moment of his journey and every stage of it. And so it is to be for us. So we take a break, and then when you come back, we'll have a look at the three temptations that Jesus had to face in the text.